So good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin here on a Sunday in April 2022. And we are here with a source as usual, a source that this week Justin has chosen. So if you haven't noticed by now, we alternate who chooses the source. And this week, Justin has made the beautiful choice of something from Rebecca Solnit's writing. And Rebecca, thank you for being who you are and writing what you write. We've had several sources from Rebecca, I think, over the years, Justin. And just as we were coming on, I was reflecting how confounding some of Rebecca's writing is for me, and therefore how inviting and how growing and how teaching it is to me. So I'm really grateful to have her here with us, and also grateful for everybody else who is here and listening and watching and out with the dog or sitting at home or in the bath or on a treadmill or whatever you're doing. I've heard so many stories of how people listen to us, Justin. And so whatever you're doing, thank you for welcoming us into that moment with you in your life. And Justin, as usual, I can also feel the joy of us being together as this beautiful punctuating practice of our lives. So thank you. And I'm really, really overjoyed to be here and being in this conversation today. Mm.
Thank you, Lizzie. Me too. I was speaking to some dear friends of ours this last week about podcasting. And one of the things that I said was, this is the longest conversation with anyone that I've ever been in of this kind. And what an absolute privilege it is, joy it is to be in this conversation. And I'm really glad that there are lots and lots and lots of people who watch and listen. And I would do this even if nobody did, because it's so life-giving. So thank you, Lizzie. But also I want to sort of extend the net around everyone who's with us, because even though we do this with, even if nobody showed up, it also really matters that you're here. It also really matters. It feels like a growing community of conversation. And for any of you who are with us, you're so welcome to join us in our Facebook group if you want. You can just search for us and join in, and there's a place to respond to each of the conversations and the sources, which you're very welcome to do. And quite recently, we invented a way that you could get these by email. So if you go to our turningtowards.life website, where all of the conversations are, you can also put your email address in, and we will email you this every week as well, which is kind of fun too. So this source from Rebecca Solnit's book, The Faraway Nearby, you can find in the Facebook group. If you're listening on the podcast, you'll find it in the notes that come with the podcast episode. It goes out in the email, it's on the websites with the YouTube videos, all of that. And I think, Lizzie, that Rebecca is also drawing on the work of David. Well, she mentions David Graeber, and I think she's drawing on, there's a book that he wrote about debt and money that this comes from. So if anyone's interested, that might be a place to follow. And here's the source. Sometimes to accept is also a gift. The anthropologist David Graeber points out that the explanation that we invented money because barter was too clumsy is false. It wasn't that I was trying to trade 60 sweaters for the violin you'd made when you didn't really need all that wooliness. Before money, Graeber wrote, people didn't barter, but gave and received as needs and goods ebbed and flowed. They thereby incurred the indebtedness that bound them together and reciprocated slowly, incompletely, in the ongoing transaction that is a community. Money was invented as a way to sever the ties by completing the transactions that never needed to be completed in the older system, but existed like a circulatory system in a body. Money makes us separate bodies, and maybe it teaches us that we should be separate.
Sometimes to accept is also a gift. The anthropologist David Graeber points out that the explanation that we invented money because barter was too clumsy is false. It wasn't that I was trying to trade 60 sweaters for the violin you'd made when you didn't really need all that wooliness. Before money, Graeber wrote, people didn't barter, but gave and received as needed, and goods ebbed and flowed. Sorry, I read that wrong. People didn't barter, but gave and received as needs and goods ebbed and flowed. They thereby incurred the indebtedness that bound them together and reciprocated slowly, incompletely, in the ongoing transaction that is a community. Money was invented as a way to sever the ties by completing the transactions that never needed to be completed in the older system, but existed like a circulatory system in a body. Money makes us separate bodies, and maybe it teaches us that we should be separate.
I'm really glad to have this writing in the middle of us. It's kind of complicated, but also it seemed to me, in a way, very straightforward and challenging to a way of living that probably most of us have just grown up in without seeing. And the way I got the part of it that I'm feeling very drawn into beginning with, Lizzie, is they thereby incurred the indebtedness that bound them together and reciprocated slowly, incompletely in the ongoing transaction that's a community. So when I go round to the shop round the corner and buy something in the shop, it seems really obvious what we do. I take something in the shop, like a tin of beans, and I give the person in the shop money, and the amount of money I give them for the tin of beans is the exact amount that they're asking for the tin of beans. And I say thank you and I walk out of the shop, and our relationship could then be done. I need never ever see them again. I need never ever talk to them again. We're not bound together. It's completely ended by them giving me the beans and me giving them the money. And what I'm understanding from this is there's another way that pre-existed money, which is we support one another in all the ways that we need to support one another. So I need beans and somebody gives me beans, and I may not be able to reciprocate because we don't have money yet. I may not be able to give them the value of the beans. So now I owe them something. And one day further down the line, I'm going to have something that will be really useful to them, and I can play my part in reciprocating by doing the thing that's called for them, which honors the fact that they gave me some beans. And then we're in relationship. And one of the reasons it's hard to talk about is it's really hard to see, I think, until we start to look, that the way money works in our culture is it allows us to not be in relationship apart from the moment where money changes hands and then we're done. Like, I'm completely freed of any relationship apart from in that instant between when somebody gives me the thing and I give them the money. For about 30 seconds, we're in a relationship. Or maybe somebody's painting my house and I haven't paid them for the painting. So for that time, we're in relationship. But once they're finished and the money's changed hands, we're freed and we're separate again. So I'm so taken by this idea that there's another way of being human together, which is to take care of one another, to know that what I can offer you might be something that only I can offer you, and that you have no way of reciprocating yet. And one day you're going to reciprocate. And as we do that, we're going to bind ourselves deeper and deeper into relationship, that we're going to make community together.
Mm.
And that requires something that the money system on its own takes from us. It requires relationship and reciprocity and trust and openness. And it also requires this amazing thing that this whole piece that Rebecca's written starts with, which is, it requires us to be willing to accept from one another. So you do something for me and I have no way of paying you, or maybe only a partial way of paying you, or maybe not yet. And I have to let myself do something that is so unusual in our culture, which is to go, yes, I'm willing to receive and I'm willing to be indebted to you. I'm willing to owe you something. I'm willing to make a promise your way. that at some point in the future, I will take care of you in return. So we're bound. And there's a gift in my being willing to accept that makes me vulnerable and connected and in a way dependent and woven with you. And it's just the last thing for me to say in this beginning part is I'm really feeling how countercultural that is for most of us in the culture, in the way that we've come to understand money and transaction. So that I should render myself, that I might take the vulnerable step of making myself connected to you, is exactly what we're taught not to do, because business is business, and business is hard, and business is disconnected, and business is calculating. What about if it was really just exchange, and it was relational and intimate and binding and weaving? That's where I'm finding myself beginning feeling greatly moved by the possibility, and also deeply wondering about what it might be for us all to attend to making community in this way.
Gosh, it's so confronting. Like, it feels like so much of life is dictated by this part of our human system. It's extraordinary. And I feel like, Justin, I can't not mention our lovely friend Nina, who is my biggest teacher in this realm. And she always says money just needs to flow where it needs to go. So what's the answer? You know? And I feel like there's a way of basing your life around money versus money being something that we can use, but really our life is based in something else. And I think Nina's one of those people who doesn't get determined by the transactional nature of things, which is so easy to become transactional in our lives and say, well, if someone doesn't have the money, they don't have the money, you know, and then certain things require money. And so I feel like it's such a very, very strong narrative that we exist in. And I feel kind of grief stricken, really, that of how much of my behavior and my action the story of money dictates. So I know how afraid I get when our resources are very limited, and I think, what am I going to do? And of course, there are humans. Like, it's going to be okay. Like, I think it's so much is wound up with our dignity and our worth and our value and our kind of social standing. There's just, it feels so big. It feels so huge now we're standing here in it and wondering. And I just feel like this realm where money wasn't the thing that dictated the narrative that we live in, the story of what's possible with one another, it feels so far away. And I feel really sad about that, because of course I have so many experiences where money has not been the thing that was being exchanged for things. And of course, those are the experiences that are the richest and the most moving. And, you know, I'm thinking of when I gave birth to my little Vespa and the kind of outpourings of goodness and generosity and love that didn't have any money in them at all, that were in that moment of vulnerability, this kind of evidence of the outpouring of goodness and support that was there, that I could thankfully was able in myself to really accept. And I remember every single little act of kindness and warmth and support and words and deeds and loveliness. And of course, that's what the world is made of. So all of a sudden, when there's a vulnerability, the world is revealed, which isn't made of this. And in some way it is. You know, somebody might have had to spend some money to make a cake or something, but really the majority of the energy is human doing and giving and being. So I feel very kind of thrown into all the questions of where I make money more central than it should be. And also letting that conversation, that narrative, limit what feels possible when maybe it needn't. You know, I was hearing of someone the other day who decided that they wanted to do something, but they didn't want to rely on a bank. So they emailed all of their friends and they asked. And by the time the person I know got back to them and said, oh yeah, let's talk, we'll see what we can do, they said, oh no, it's been covered. Everyone just said, of course, we don't want you to have to borrow from a bank to do this. This is for your life, and let's see what we can do, and we'll create terms with one another if we need the money back. And there were many, many sources of this. And I thought, oh my goodness, okay. So the human systems that we have with each other, families and friends and communities, are a place to turn to. And we don't have to just keep participating in the way that this narrative tells us to, by its kind of implicit nature in us. And as you said, we've all just grown up inside of it. So a world without, I mean, like, you know, as a tiny one, I used to play post offices and take everybody's money from them and stamp the thing and give it back to them. It was my favorite game. Of course, you know, not understanding anything about it, but it's kind of that embedded.
Yeah, it's a moving story about the situation of reaching out to a community around us and asking for support. And I think that's the thing that is most present here for me, is the way the story of money, and it's so right, I think, that you say it this way, that money is obviously, it's a thing, but it's also a story. And it's a story, it comes with stories about how we should treat one another. So are we prepared? One of the things that really struck me about this instance of somebody going and asking lots of people around them is that immediately it creates relationship. If you and 20 other people who know me and care about me lend me some resource so that I can do something that matters in my life, you are immediately bound up in the thing that I'm doing. You have a care for this, whatever it is, the something I'm doing. And I have a mutual and reciprocal care bound in back to you to honor the support that you gave for me, whether it's that I pay you back the exact number of pennies that you gave me, or that I honor you in some other way. And there's many, many other ways that we can do it, and that we're weaving something. And to be human is to be relational. That's the thing. To be human is to allow ourselves to become available to one another, vulnerable to one another, supported by one another, cared for by one another. And the risk that the money system has is that it dissolves that and undoes that. And whilst you were talking about it, I was thinking about just in the simplest form, how many times are we led by the story of money in our culture to go into a shop, to go and buy a coffee somewhere or a can of beans, and to treat the person who's serving us just as the machine that completes the transaction? I've got nothing to do with you, person behind the counter. You're just the person who's enabling me to have the beans and you to have the money, and we're done. What happens when what we do is we go, there's a human there. I am entering into relationship with that human because we're in this transaction. You are providing us a way that I can have some food, and I'm providing a way that you can care for the things you need to care for. What if we allowed ourselves to be bound together way beyond the moment of that exchange? The money plays this role of freeing us. And in a way for me, the expression of the sort of the natural expression of this that I see that I find so difficult is going into a shop and finding there isn't anybody to give money to. There's just a machine which says place, at least here in the UK, there are machines and they speak, but they don't speak like people. And they say place bag on bagging area. It's computer speak. And the whole possibility that there might be somebody that I could even enter into relationship with has been taken away, because it's much more monetarily efficient not to have a human there, just to have a machine that I can swipe. And it's convenient, it goes quicker. You know, you don't have to queue as long. You can have 50 machines instead of a couple of people, but it does this thing exactly as Rebecca writes. What it does is it severs the ties that would, by breaking the relationship that would never have been completed in an old system, you would always be in. And there is a shop around the corner from me. I live in a part of London where there are a number of very tightly webbed communities. There's a shop around the corner from me where, as far as I can tell, nobody ever pays in cash when they buy something. The man in the shop has a list of all the families who are around and he notes down what they owe. And at some point, they pay him. You can feel that what's going on in this shop is a giant web is being made. And people know one another and see one another as people instead of as objects. And I think, so for me, it's just really illuminating to see, oh, I participate in this. Mm. It's really, really easy for me to move through the world, separating myself from everybody and everything around me, because money as our system allows me to do that. Or if I'm in trouble and I need to rely on something, I get, in the example that you're saying, our systems, you might pick up a benefit. You know, you might have benefits money paid into your account, or you might have to take out a loan from a bank, whatever. But it's all without relationship. But we have choices. That's the thing that I'm getting into. I actually can go into the shop and make a relationship with the person behind the counter. I can make them a person.
Mm.
I can choose ways to support. This is exactly what we were saying about Nina. I can choose ways to have all of this be a making of relationship with all that comes from it.
Yeah.
It's available to us. We don't have to dismantle the whole money system to yeah. participate.
Yeah.
In life in this way, but we don't get led that way unless we're really paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm. And Justin, as you're talking, I'm really reflecting on how important it is to know what the transactional nature of money is doing to me, so that I can be conscious of it and make those choices out of that consciousness of what I've been made into for all these years. So I really need to see that the transactional nature of money turns me into a transactional being. And then as I can see that, I can make some choices in the consciousness that that's what I'm becoming all the time to do something differently. So I was just thinking about, you know, I get so easily, and also because of the pandemic, where we weren't allowed to go out of the house, and Vespa needs a new pair of shoes or something. And I think, well, I'll quickly go on the internet and just find her shoes. And I don't know if they're going to fit or not, but, you know, her feet are growing and I can't leave the house. Like, you know, what am I going to do, kind of thing? And that experience of her just having shoes that arrive at the door versus us going to the shoe shop and talking to the lady and having the experience of having our feet measured and meeting people and it being an experience is like an entirely different life for me and for her. And so I feel like I've got some kind of post-pandemic undoing to do as well, where the transactional nature of things just got ramped up because I couldn't go anywhere to do the things So then my practices have changed of like, well, I need something, and and it's something like a pair of shoes for Vesper. I got to do something, and it's online. And so I'm just realizing how I can be made more and more transactional by the system if I allow it, by the money system if I allow it. I can become a transactional being, or I can know I'm being transactionalized and make different choices and see what proportion of my life I can make into an exchange system where I'm being with one another and being with the kind of human system of it. And I'm also thinking of the times when I really recognize that the money transaction is like this tiny slither and the human transaction is the main experience of it. And there's so many pieces of my life that are that, which is, yes, there's some money changing hands, but actually the broader experience of what that creates is the main experience of the thing. And just because I've paid some money to someone or they've paid it to me doesn't mean that we're done now. You know, there's much, much, much more to the picture. And, you know, I'm thinking of a project my sister's having done in her home at the moment, and they're being treated really, really badly by the people who are providing a service to them. And as in people not turning up and people not doing what they say they're going to do, and they're being misinformation all over the place. And actually, just because there's money changed hands, it doesn't make anything go away. It actually is just the kind of the beginning. And then how we behave with one another makes that transaction okay or not. So I feel also all of these human values, of course, are also imbued in the money system. Like you said, you know, when I spend time in your garden digging the beds with you, I have an investment, if you like, in your space. And it really matters to me whether those tulips grow, or not that I get to take them away or criticize you or something, but in my heart, I feel invested in how those tulips grow. And of course, that's mirrored in the money systems too. Like but in a really transactional way, like I can see the humanness mirrored, but it's kind of really distorted and turned into something else, which is, oh, I'm invested in that. And if something goes wrong, I get to have that from you. So it's kind of been really twisted into something quite different along the way, but you can feel the hues of the humanness inside all of the systems. And so I feel like the kind of the light's been turned onto this whole thing, this whole narrative, this whole continual, consistent, everyday invitation to become transactional in our nature. And I feel really invited into what is the undoing of that? What has me be the being that I really am, rather than the being that is turned into a transactional being by the system that we're in?
Gosh, I'm so struck by what you said about buying shoes. And then everything you've said after it, that what you're showing us is that because the way money works allows us to build systems that disconnect us, is what it does. To be distant, whereas before money we would be intimate. You know, and I'm sure it wouldn't always be very easy. If I'd done something for you and it was time for me to be supported and you weren't ready or you didn't want to or whatever, and we might have all kinds of disagreements and everything, but what we would be doing is we would be bringing ourselves in close, and that's what we are. That we're relational, we are profoundly, deeply relational beings. And money allows us to reduce, if we choose to, it allows us to reduce the relationship to the moment of transaction, or to the, like you were saying about having, you know, somebody's doing something, providing some kind of service, to the, we can then detach ourselves. We can go, well, I've paid you, so I can treat you the way I want. Or what a big difference it is to buy, and it is convenient and quick, to buy a pair of shoes online, which arrive at your doorstep. What a different world that makes from the going and weaving yourself into the community that exists in and around a shoe shop where there are people who will hold your feet and do that bit where they squeeze the ends of the shoes to, you know, and you can feel somebody squeezing the end of the shoes to see if your feet fit, and they look you in the eye and they ask you what you care about, and you might start to make a relationship with them as a person, not just as a transactor of a purchase. There's an actual person there. And this, there's something, Lizzie and you talking about buying shoes, which really showed me that we can build a world through our day-to-day practices that increasingly distances us from one another, or increasingly brings us in close. And convenience, and also the way that the economic system works, that works on efficiency rather than relationship, convenience and efficiency can very, very easily pull us apart from one another. Right when we need community the most, we need one another, we need to be in relationship. It's deeply fulfilling and life-giving and humanizing. And also, it was Earth Day this week. It's the same thing with our relationship with the world, in which we, with the whole world, we can deepen our relationship with the places we're in, with what's growing around us, with everything. Or we can make ourselves, as Rebecca says, separate bodies, and be taught that we should be separate. And the amazing thing for me in this conversation is it's not the system in and of itself. You know, we're not going to, we could be sitting here talking about tearing down the money system, but frankly, I wouldn't know what you would replace it with and how the world would work and how you would not just, you know, pull the world apart in doing so. That's actually not the question. There is actually an immediate question for each of us, which is, what kind of person do I choose to be? Am I prepared to bind myself to you and to many others? Am I prepared to be vulnerable to being in a relationship? Am I prepared to be loved and cared for, to love and care for, and also to navigate all of the trickiness when I expect something and it didn't come back my way, or I felt like you didn't honor me and I did? Or am I just going to keep myself at a distance at the end of a mouse click or a phone tap because it's convenient and efficient? Am I going to go into the, I was at an event a couple of weeks ago where somebody in my local area came up to me. She said, I know you. She said, you used to shop in WH Smith, where I used to work. And in WH Smith at the moment, there is somebody still working and then there's a machine. And the machine is never going to do that. The machine is never going to be the one who says, I remember when you used to come into the shop when you were 20 years ago. And I was able to say to her, when I remember you and what's happening in your life, that is so important for us as humans. And we could throw it away without even realizing that that's what we're doing.
Yeah. It's making me think, Justin, as well, of how important and how motivated I feel to support places that I know who the person is that's put something on the line to do it. So in our little local area, I feel really, actually, there's a girl who I used to go to school with, and she bravely set up her own shop with food and lovely bread and vegetables and things. And I really know how hard it's been. You know, she had this dream and it happened, and it was a lot harder than she thought it was going to be. And I know the story of the whole thing. And I feel so motivated to keep on buying her bread and keep on buying, you know, going to her shop and getting a coffee or a croissant or something, because I know that it's her. That feels really real to me. And of course, then we also have like Amazon Fresh on our high street as well, which I haven't been in yet because I feel really scared of it. It's like going into, it's got like barriers, like when you go into a chain station or something, and I don't know how it works. So I'm just noticing my humanness and what it's drawn to, and how far things have gone, and maybe they'll keep going that way, I don't know. But certainly at this moment, I feel drawn into, oh, Sally's shop is a really different thing than the barriers that I don't know what to do with, and I can't figure out how on earth that would happen because I can't see a human in there, shows the difference and the way that the world could be completely going or something. So I really do want to support the things that feel naturally supportable to me, like our local shoe shop and our Sally's shop and the places that I can find the human inside of them. And actually there's another little Italian place. It's an Italian family who always say hello to Vespa when we go in to get a treat of tiramisu. And it feels like that world is such an important world for us to keep participating in and to keep building and supporting. Because of course there is the machine narrative that I think we've done lots of these conversations on as well. Just in this money narrative doesn't feel far away from the machine narrative and the productivity narrative and the efficiency narrative, and how undoing of our humanness those narratives can be is really, really stark for me right now.
I feel like we're opening a huge territory here, Lizzie, and we've only begun to explore the implications of what it is to choose the kinds of choices about the stories we might have about what we're doing.
Yeah.
When we transact, where money is the, what is it?
Yeah.
We started to explore, and I'm left, as we come to the end of this, fascinated by, you know, you and I are involved in this endeavor called Third Space, and we've got ways that we think about this in how we put on our courses and how we do coaching. And I'm also left fascinated by how do we turn to the ones around us, the neighbors in our streets, and weave ourselves into reciprocal relationships and not all be along, you know, invisible to one another, transacting with something in the center, because that's the other thing that goes on with this is we can easily miss the ones who are right next to us. So I'm incredibly grateful to you for being willing to enter into a source that is confounding and really starts to stretch us and be together in it. Yeah. And just say thank you to everyone, all of you, for being with us and for staying with us. You're so welcome to bring other people to Turning Towards Life. You could just share it with people. And it's time for us to finish. So we will be back next week. And thank you, everyone. We'll see you then.
Bye, everybody.